All right, before we kick into this episode, I just have a quick favor to ask. If you would do me the honor of heading over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to Slow Down Man, and subscribe, first of all. And if you are on Apple Podcasts, if you can go and leave a written review, an honest review, honestly, means the world. Really appreciate it. Appreciate you listening, and enjoy this episode. Welcome. Thanks for tuning in. Slow Down Man. I'm Mitch. Today we've got someone. She's coached over 100 men on how to build confidence, get clarity in life, and experience happier relationships. Kimberly Hill, welcome to the show. Thanks for slowing down with us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I could always use the reminder to slow down a little bit.
I think we all can. We all can. Yeah. There's seriously, in today's society, everything's telling you to speed up. And sometimes we need to remind ourselves to, slow things down a little bit.
Take it easy. That's my mantra, actually. All of 2020, my mantra was, there is no rush.
Ooh, I like
that. Just like that, with like the slowness of it. There is no rush. And that has actually been like a massive saving grace for me, because I'm a very A-type, very frantic at times.
Yeah.
And that's like my reminder, just be like, take it easy. Like, no one even cares.
Right. Oh, I love that. What led to that mantra? Like, because COVID mm-hmm. was a time where it forced us to slow down in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And then you doubled down on this approach and were like, no, take it easy, Kimberly. Like, was it COVID that hit? And you're like, and you still wanted to go. And you're like, no, it's okay. Like, let's pause a little
bit. Yeah, partly that, probably unconsciously, also part before that. Like, this is like me, who I am. I'm like a rushy type person. Like, I looking at my like elementary school report cards, my teachers would be like, Kimberly is doing such a wonderful job, but she's making careless mistakes. She just needs to slow down. Like, I've been getting this message like my whole life. And then for some reason, I don't remember what particular month it was. It was also around the time I started dating my current partner. I was like, chill out. There is no rush. Like, take it easy. Take your own advice. Take your own advice. So I think maybe a year ago, I started saying this to myself, finally.
Hey, better late than never. Yeah. And it's funny. Sometimes when we slow down, we can actually get more done. I find, at least.
100%.
It's crazy. Kimberly, this I have to ask you about. On your website, you have a video talking about your coaching practice and what you do, how you work with your clients, and you have in brackets your nickname, which is Kimbo Slice.
Oh, it's so funny that you're asking this too, because I've like nobody ever goes to my website, really. Most people look at my social media, and in fact, I started updating it yesterday, so that video is actually not even there anymore. Like, within the last 12 hours. Yes, my nickname is Kimbo Slice. Obviously, I'm not a wrestler. I'm not African American. I'm not 300 pounds, and I'm still alive. But I got this nickname because for about 10 years before I started this business, coaching and supporting men, I worked in financial derivatives. So I've worked in a very male dominated industry. I worked for many of those years in Australia, some of them in Singapore. And I was a woman in a sea of men, and I had a toughness about me, of course, because you've got to, if you want to survive and thrive in those types of industries. And I don't know, out of the blue, the boys started calling me like Kimbo Slice. Kimbo Slice is in the house. And I'm like, don't mess with me, guys. So that's where that came from. I had multiple nicknames in that industry, but Kimbo Slice was one of them. So,
that's an amazing nickname.
Said something on that. I think a couple hundred people have watched that video, and no one's ever mentioned it.
Honestly, it was the first thing I noticed. It just stood out, like it was highlighted.
I got to put that video back up, although that was ages ago. Should. I recorded that.
You should. Okay, well, there's a lot of men in the men's space helping men. And usually with when men are helping men in the men's space, it's pretty apparent what got them there. It's like they, you know, they work through their own shit and then they want to help other men work through that stuff. So,
yep.
But I'm curious, I'm always curious when I see women like you who are doing amazing work with men and but are dedicated to helping men in terms of how they and why they got into that space.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what brought you into this current passion and line of a career that you're in yeah. helping men specifically?
I think I do get this question often, and I feel like I give a different answer every time, because there isn't one catalyst or one thing that happened that made me go, oh, I want to specifically help men. In fact, I had a lot of resistance around working directly with men. But given my past, all the stuff that led me to where I am today, I have spent most of my career life working with men, being in that industry and derivatives market, especially in Australia, being around Aussie male culture. I reported to men, I work with men, I travel with men, I hired men, I fired men. That was like my world, men, and mm-hmm. I dated them. So I was surrounded by them. The truth is, I never really realized I specifically wanted to help men. I always knew I wanted to help people. And I've always been doing that my whole life. So I would have men and women just come to me as a friend, as an acquaintance, and want my opinion, want my support. I even noticed that the men that I did work with in the derivatives market were very open and honest with me. Mm. They felt like they could confide in me. I was a trustworthy person. And I actually started working with a coach myself. I think most coaches have had a coach before, which is part of their catalyst and why they want to become one. I was working with a coach while I was in my previous career in finance. And it was through multiple conversations with him and like realizing that I wanted to get into a helping type role. I didn't know what that looked like or felt like. And of course, I wanted to do what men want to do with other men. I wanted to do that with women. I was like, I want to help women build their confidence. I want to help them. My initial idea was I want to help women rise to the top of their careers. I want them to feel empowered, but I want them to not do it at the disadvantage of men. I want them to rise up and feel supported, because I know that there's a little bit of feminism out there and like women trampling over men, give us the attention, give us the spotlight. It's like not who I am. I don't support that. And so anyways, long story short, I started my business specifically targeting women, you know, had the pink branding and all that kind of stuff, and really wanted to like empower them to like feel confident about their bodies, about careers, like everything. Then I hired another coach, a male coach. And we got right into like, how can I grow this business? Cause I'm serious about it. Like I had already quit my job, right? I left like a very high salary. I left a lot of security to like, go do this passion, right? Passion project. Like it's either going to work or it's not. And he challenged me on a lot of my self-limiting beliefs. Like, cause I thought, oh, working with men in this line of work, I'm going to be totally honest with you, Mitch. I thought, okay, like I'm not an ugly woman. I'm probably not Angelina Jolie, but I was like, if I work with men, it's going to be like completely misconstrued. They're going to think that I'm either coming on to them or they're going to come on to me. It's not going to work. I had all these self-limiting beliefs, because let's be real, in that industry that I was in before, there's a lot of, you know, comments and you know, maybe unwanted like pats on the back and things like that. And so I had developed this mindset like, it's not going to work. I can't be a woman doing this line of work. And so that's why I shied away from it. My coach really challenged me and said, I actually think that your strength is working with men, because that is all that you've ever done. It made me completely, since I made that shift, it was like, I don't know how to even describe it. It just completely opened up the realization that this is what I feel like I'm meant to do. And I am very good at it. And I connect with men, and I haven't had a single client built into that belief that I have. They're all very professional. They're all kind. None of them hit on me. It's not like that. And so my original belief of what it was going to be like was totally incorrect. And it's just flourished ever since then. So I also am very passionate about working with men, because there are not very many females out there supporting men in this way. There's so much media out there about women getting out of toxic relationships with men, and they're aggressive, and they, you know, I just need to find the right man that bends over backwards for me. And I'm kind of like, this is a bunch of crap. Like, there are toxic women out there too. Like, I'm going to stand up for everybody. I support women too. But like, I put a post out. One of my like first posts was like, toxic women destroy good relationships too, but no one ever talks about that. And it was like, everyone was like. So
just blew up.
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
They, honestly, when I asked it, I thought you'd be like, oh, I had this one dude in my life. He was, you know, and he inspired me to, but it way more behind it than I was anticipating.
Yeah.
It's crazy, Kimberly, how you, and even from talking to you for however long, 10 minutes, I can tell you have, like, you're making me feel comfortable as a man. You have this kind of like, I don't know, toughness, like you said, that I think men can, they can go like, oh, cool. It's like talking to my buddy kind of thing. You
I'm
know
not
what I mean?
Going to break her. Don't worry. She's not, yeah. I am sensitive. I'm an HSP. Of course I get offended, but I also have a toughness to me as well. And it's probably because of working in that industry. And like, I'm grateful for it. And one of the other reasons I think I'm very passionate about what I do is because I have also, you know, I would have considered myself that fixer upper in relationships too. I always were dating amazing men, but men that always had some little bit of insecurity. And I always felt like it was my responsibility to fix them, which is obviously, I would never advise anyone ever does that. And I also saw a lot of men hurting. And what I mean by hurting is like working so hard at work, fitting into that kind of like toxic masculinity type bubble where it's like strength, no emotion, bringing the money home, tough guys got to go out all night. But at the end of the day, they were like hurting inside, and I could see right through that. And that's part of, I guess, my motivation for wanting to allow men to express themselves and know that they're still masculine men while doing so. Yeah.
You had a post, I think yesterday or a couple days ago, perhaps, about the healthy masculine. Mm-hmm. Which is kind of down that tangent, and how, you know, so many men are operating from what they think a man, and I know I've done this many times in the past, where it's like operating from like, oh, what does the cool guy do? What is a, you know, what does this traditional definition of what being a man looks like? What would he do? As opposed to, you know, actually showing up authentically, expressing how I actually feel, and really just owning all parts of me, even if parts of them don't mesh up with this cool guy persona that that is broadcasted out there as to what a man should be. Can you talk about what a healthy masculine looks like, and I guess what you were getting at with that post?
Yeah, 100%. In fact, someone who's connected with me on Instagram said you should do a podcast on it, and I just did a podcast that went out yesterday on what is healthy masculine. So the first thing I talked about was the male stereotypes first and foremost. So what a man is supposed to be based on whoever the heck told you this is what you're supposed to be, society, movies, the past, whatever. So the male stereotypes, the cool guy or whatever you want to call it, like the man of today is the kind of man that doesn't ask for help. You know, he's super strong in his own emotions. No, he wouldn't even be spiritual. He's just super strong physically and mentally. He's only really allowed to express a couple of different emotions. He's allowed to express anger, jealousy, and lust and joy. That's it. Anything else is totally not okay. He's the guy that has to be the breadwinner, take care of everyone around him. You know, so obviously, you know, he's got to be earning more than his partner. And he's super solid. You know, he doesn't cry. He doesn't show sadness. That's like stereotype of what men should be like, right? You're super tough. Like I talked in the podcast about like, you know, dad saying, I'll give you something to cry about, but like, it's just a game. Don't cry. Like be tougher, do better next time. This whole like rah, rah, rah. bottle up and shove down any emotion that is not the four that I mentioned, right?
Right.
Those are the stereotypes. But, well, that's crap. Let's be real. And if we look at the statistics, a lot of women are outperforming men financially. A lot of women are outperforming men in degrees and grades in university. So it's like, it's actually really hard for a man to even fit that stereotype nowadays, or I'm going to try a heck of a lot harder. And that's not what we want. That's not what women want from their male partners. What we really want is a healthy masculine male. And that is a man. Of course, we desire strong men who are assertive and are tapped into that masculine. Sure, we like strong arms and tallness in men, but those are just external things. What women really want and what a real healthy masculine male is a man that's not afraid to show a wide range of emotions. Right? Disgust, sadness, fear, anxiety, all of those things. That's what makes a man real. And he knows that he's a man, even when he's expressing those emotions, right? He doesn't think that crying means that he's like, let's be real. This is what people would say, that you're a pussy, that you're not tough, that you're feminine, right?
There's shame around it. Yeah.
There's tons of shame around it, right? So instead of expressing joy or the real emotions they're feeling, they bottle them up. And then of course that manifests in so many other ways. Anger, toxic relationships, substance abuse, you name it, right? So that's one thing. The healthy masculine male is also comfortable with his sexuality. So he knows that he can be in that kind of comforting role to other men if needed, right? And to women if needed, right? He also is able to express that he wants touch and affection and love. So he can go hug a bro, right? He can hug a woman. He can ask for that. That doesn't make him any less manly. I adore it when my partner is like, give me a cuddle. There's a TikTok out there, I think, where it's like, it's supposed to be like a funny TikTok where like the girl is cuddling the guy in bed and he's like just loving it. And just like, he's like snuggling up into her. And then of course, like he notices he's being filmed. He's like, get off me. I don't like this. Like, what are you doing? Right? Like, cause of course that's what he has to be like in society.
But it's like seen like this. Yeah.
Yeah. But like what man doesn't love being cuddled, really?
Oh, yeah.
And like, that's a healthy, healthy masculine, you know, obviously healthy male is someone that's not disrespecting or mistreating women. If he sees that kind of behavior with other men, he calls it out. He's not afraid to say, stop being like that. That's totally unacceptable. You know, he's just confident within himself. He accepts who he is. That's just a healthy male, right?
So, right.
Yeah.
Amazing. Here's my question is what does a, like that you just described a healthy masculine and it's beautiful. What does an unhealthy masculine looks like? Cause I think that a piece of the trouble that men have in moving towards this healthy masculine, is a fear of pushing it too far and going into, you know, these, and you mentioned the feminist movement, is pushing it too far and becoming overly, you know, pushing the boundary where women will call them out and judge them and shame them for being a toxic male. Like where does that line exist? Do you think?
I think everything exists on a spectrum. So it's like, you know, you can be really healthy. You can be really toxic. You can be quite tapped into your masculine. You can be quite tapped into your feminine, very emotional, whatever, like just be where you really want to be at the end of the day. But toxic masculinity is like, you know, again, the same kind of things, the stereotypes I talked about, like you're not allowed to express, you know, true emotions. You have to be tough all the time. If there's a man that is in your community or circle that you see is not tough, you're going to like belittle him or make fun of him or call him out on it. You're not going to be very supportive of that. Toxic, obviously, masculinity is like, it's, you know, rah, rah, rah. There's a lot of anger, which manifests in things like drug abuse or porn addiction or video game addiction or food addiction, whatever, right? Because if you're not actually expressing your true self, you're going to find a way to bury yourself and hide your emotion. So, I mean, for me, that's toxic masculinity.
Right, right. Yeah. I love how you say it's a spectrum, it's a range, because I think that's so true. It's like a healthy masculine is just you're in touch with the full range of what's possible in your human experience. You can be consoling, comforting, and cuddling. And you can be, you know, the strong leader at times and those more real, you know, common definitions of what a masculine looks like. But it's just being in touch with all of that.
It's knowing when to tap into all those different things. And let's be real. Some men are very feminine. Some men are gay. And that's okay if that's what they choose to be. They're very tapped into that feminine side. And like, it's not anyone's job to say you should be more or less of anything, right? It's, you know, use your common sense. Be kind to other people. It's just, easy.
Yeah, just recognize where you are on the thermostat and, you know, be okay with that. Can you talk about that a little bit? What does the, I was going to change gears, but can you talk about that a little bit? What does the toxic feminine look like? Because I don't think that's talked about a lot.
No, and I don't even know if I've even looked at a definition of that, but just from my own understanding, a toxic female is someone that just also belittles other people. Toxic women in relationships with men will criticize the man, they'll put him down, they'll make him not feel manly enough. Not good enough, right? Like women sometimes have these unrealistic high expectations of what their partner should be providing for them. And it's like this sense of entitlement. I think that's super uncool. And I obviously coach a lot of men that have come out of relationships with women that like used and abused them. It's like, what gives you the right to like do nothing with your life and expect someone to just wait on you hand and foot? Like drives me mental. So of course, toxic femininity is very much that is like playing like the victim card and like expecting everyone to, you know, wait on you hand and foot and being very critical. So yeah, that's in my brain, what comes up for me.
Interesting. And that's common, you say, with men you're coaching who are like that, that's a common thing.
Yeah, for sure. Most of the men I'm dealing with have some element of not feeling good enough because they typically would be a people pleaser. They're trying so hard in their relationships to please their partner. It doesn't seem to be working. Nothing seems to be working. And so eventually it ends and they're left feeling like they have done everything wrong and nothing right. That's not how relationships work, right? So.
Yeah, that's not a good place to be in. Okay. Let's talk confidence. As mentioned, your podcast is literally called The Self-Confidence Project. Go check it out. If you liked what we just talked about on healthy masculine, you, like you said, just dropped an episode on that. But you talk a lot about confidence. I know on your website and your approach and coaching about confidence, your podcast is called The Self-Confidence Project. Would you say that confidence is the key to finding a healthy, loving, reciprocal relationship? Like is why do you focus so much on confidence? I guess is my question. Yeah.
Well, because if we don't love ourselves or feel confident in our abilities, we're just not going to be making the best choices. So the truth is, the way I market myself is like, I support men to build healthy, loving relationships. I help them in dating. I help them in relationships. A good portion of the work we do is them focusing on themselves. Like what is not happening in their lives that's making them overthink their relationships or make bad choices. Most of the time, what's really interesting is the men I work with are lacking other healthy male friendships. They're not doing the things that bring them joy anymore, like the passions. They're not taking care of their health and or fitness. So really, before we even talk about how to have a better relationship, you need to have a better relationship with yourself first. Like I know from my own experience, the reason most of my relationships didn't work out, sure, there were flaws in my partner. There were flaws in me too. I didn't love myself enough to ask for what I wanted, to make good choices, to communicate the things I needed. And so I relied way too much on the other person for my sense of self-worth and happiness. Like that is a recipe for disaster. So the way to kind of get yourself even opening up to having that loving, genuine, authentic connection is to have that within yourself first. And so call it confidence, call it self-worth, call it self-love, whatever you want. I have self-acceptance tattooed on my body because at 18, it finally clicked that that's what I needed to work on. And it took me a decade to figure it out. So yes, it has a lot to do with being confident with who we are and confident at our skills, first and foremost, like the best dating advice anyone can ever give you is self-improvement.
Right. Yeah. Work on yourself first. I love that. And I think, in my experience, relationships in a lot of ways can be, they hold up mirrors to us saying like, listen, you don't love yourself fully. You still overvalue this. You don't like this about yourself. And in the end, those things end up, if we don't address them and really freaking look them in the eyes and fully acknowledge them, accept them and work on them, they'll bring us down in that relationship. And that those patterns in my experience continue to come up until we go, okay, but like, I see you, I'm going to face this thing now and bring it. Yeah. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I do believe that our internal world, how we feel about ourselves, is reflected on the external world. So if I'm I know this for a fact, like I was in a place of quite low confidence and like low self-worth after I left my career. I was wanting to start this business. I was like, whoa, my identity, who am I? I'm not Kim in finance anymore. I'm like, Kim, that's right. Like, what? I don't know. So I was feeling quite awful about myself and I was making really bad choices, including a very poor choice in getting into a relationship that wasn't right for me. Person, nothing bad to say about them. Well, maybe a little bit, but it wasn't the right thing for me. And it was also a reflection of how I was feeling at the time. I was trying to force something that wasn't even meant to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's because it was a reflection of how I felt about myself. Right. So that's why most of the work I do with men is like, let's get the house in order. Like, what are the parts of your life that you're not giving attention to right now because you're worrying so much about the relationship? Like, you have to know how to live a full, happy life as a single individual before you get into a relationship. Because the biggest mistake that a lot of us make is we rely on our partners to give us a sense of self-worth. We rely on our partners to be the source of our happiness. And these are two really toxic relationship beliefs that really harm us.
Yeah. And lead to codependency, right? When we're getting our value from the other person.
Or abuse or manipulation or whatever. Oof,
yeah. None of which are good things.
No.
I'm curious then, Kimberly, there's a saying out there, which I'm sure you've heard, which is like, don't get into relationship until you fully love yourself first. Like fully. Mm-mm. And where you're fully happy single. And I like, truthfully, I don't really believe in this. I think that like certainly work on loving yourself, bring aware, like you say, the self-development piece, you come to a place where you like your life, but like I think you can also grow and develop that self-love piece in relationship when that mirror is held up, as we talked about.
Yeah, you're right. Like a lot of people also believe that they have to have their life in perfect working order before they allow someone into their lives. I also think that's a bunch of crap because it's like you might take you 20 or 30 years to even feel like you're there. And then you've wasted 20, 30 good years that you could have spent like in a very loving, happy relationship. What is full happiness anyway? It's like, right. I experience happiness just as I experience other emotions, but I'm not happy 100% of the time. So if my benchmark was that I need to be happy 100% of the time before I allow someone into my life, I don't think that would ever happen. I'm not an enlightened being. I'm not sitting in the Himalayas. Like, I don't know. I just like, let's be real. There's a toxic side to self improvement and self work too. Like we get into this perpetual cycle of thinking we always need to be doing something better. And that actually makes us feel not enough. So there is a balance to everything, right? Yes, be wanting to improve yourself. Yes, be conscious of your shadow side. You're not so, never yourself from having the human experience.
Right. Yeah.
Just be aware of yourself. Have that emotional awareness. Yeah. Because a lot of men think they need to have their finances perfect, the right car, the right house, the right body. Right. And then I can have a partner. And it's like, well, good luck getting there. It's tough enough these days to have a well, perfectly balanced life. So if you've achieved that, thumbs up.
But it's not easy to do. In fact, probably impossible. I love.
I agree with you there. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, it's like improvement, but along the way, recognizing, you know, I am where I am. I am where I'm at, and being accepting of that, and knowing that even in my state where I don't have the six pack abs, where I don't have the amazing job making six figures, where I don't have XYZ that social media tells us we need to be the perfect man, that I'm still deserving of these to be happy and
absolutely
to have a relationship and to do these things. And that very, very good point. I love that. On that note, on the note of, you know, delaying getting into relationship because we're like, oh, I'm not ready yet. I'm not ready yet. I feel like another piece to that is that we live in a world of choice where it's like, you know, I can literally sit on my couch and order any type of cuisine in the world to my door within an hour. Yeah. And likewise with dating, I can get on an app and swipe and explore many relationships. And there's always in the mind, it's easy to think there's always something better out there. How do we know, Kimberly, if someone is right for us? How do we know if we're like, we should lock this down and really explore this one connection and not get into that trap of like, oh, I got to throw my rod back in the water and see what other fish are out there?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think the answer will be slightly different for everybody, but there's something that's coming up for me is a lot of times people confuse what's called an activated attachment with love. So we mistake the highs and lows for love, when in reality, being in that loving, stable, compatible relationship can be a little bit mundane and boring. Why? Because it's stable, it's consistent, and it's safe. And a lot of us are not used to that. We're used to like up and down and up and down and like the heart tugging and then these amazing moments where we're kissing on the top of the mountain and the next day I'm feeling so depressed with my partner, I'm thinking of leaving them. It's like we think that that's love. That's not. That's push-pull dynamic, right? Love is actually quite like comfortable and consistent and stable. And so if you're feeling safe and consistent and you have someone that has a shared value system to you, which is really, really important. Shared values are arguably more important than shared interests. And you both want the same things for your relationship. You both want to have a family. You both want to settle down and live somewhere together. You have a similar vision for where you want to go, and there's mutual respect and there's commitment and trust. Then you know you're in the right relationship. Yes, a lot of us will make that mistake of thinking the grass is greener. And those that think that way are very doomed to fail in their relationships. Because what that is saying is that I, instead of dealing with the conflict or the issue, instead of like coming towards my partner and resolving that, I'm leaning out of that relationship and assuming that it would be easier with someone else. And that means you are just checked out. So if you are going through that grass is greener in your mind all the time, of course, this doesn't apply to abusive, toxic relationships, like get out, right? You know what I mean? Right. Like get out of those. But if it's just, oh no, we're having a conflict now. Uh-oh, we've disagreed on something. We must not be compatible. It'd be so much easier with Sarah or Jen. Like you don't know that. It could be worse, right? But you're having this grass is greener syndrome. It just is basically saying that I don't want to put effort into this relationship. It just seems like it's easier somewhere else. Then you're already checking out of that relationship. So,
So good. And I love what you said about us. Like, it doesn't look like what we think it looks like. Oftentimes love, it's not this like wild, like addictive, drug that we're being hit with. But like you say, it's more of this stable, secure, feels good. It's comfortable in ways, but difficult because you have to have, like you say, these conversations. And it's not always, you know, easy necessarily, but my question is why do we get addicted to these states of push pull of somewhat, you know, of receiving love and validation and then it being pulled away from us and that roller coaster ride? Like, what is so addictive about that?
Well, when we meet somebody new and we're falling in love with them, we're producing a lot of those chemicals in our brains, right? Serotonin and dopamine and oxytocin, like the love drug. So when we're in that honeymoon phase, it's very exciting. We are literally addicted to that person.
Right.
Eventually the honeymoon phase dissipates,
fizzles out.
And then we're like, oh my God, our relationship is doomed. It's over. I'm not feeling those feels. Like, how many people have said, like, oh, I just don't feel the spark with them anymore. Yeah. Okay. Make that spark happen, because now you're just being lazy. So Esther Perel talks about this, and I love her. And she basically says, like, can we desire what we already have? Like, once it gets to that point where the honeymoon phase is over, a lot of people, and I have friends that have been like, just don't feel it anymore. It doesn't give me butterflies. Are you still doing the things with each other that you did in the beginning? Are you prioritizing one another? Are you going on fun dates? Are you having new experiences? Or have you just gotten into the mundane routine of life and you're no longer putting effort into the relationship? You can absolutely recreate those amazing moments if you're conscious enough and put the effort into doing that. I do believe, and this is what the work of the Gottman Institute talks about, is that it should be a non-negotiable to have a date night every week with your partner where you do not talk about kids and you do not talk about work. You talk about each other and what is happening for each other. You talk about your shared goals and your visions for your relationship and your dreams and your aspirations, and you connect on that level. And you go out and you have different types of intimacy. Is what I seem to be talking a lot more about these days is that there are four levels of intimacy. There's physical intimacy. We all know that, how well we're having sex, how connected we are in that physical level. A lot of us are really craving that. There's also emotional intimacy, which is being deeply known and deeply knowing someone else. There's intellectual intimacy, which is how well we're connecting on an intellectual level, talking about these big ideas and dreams for our future. Yeah. And then there's experiential intimacy, which is the joy of doing something with your partner. And so many of us are like, I don't feel that physical or that emotional connection anymore, but they're not putting effort to create that. Right. So yeah, relationships take work for a reason, because you have to be committed to keep dating and loving and choosing your partner. Yeah.
Right. I love that. And do you think at the beginning, it's like just the circumstance, it's someone new, you're not seeing each other all the time. Like the circumstance of it just kind of naturally lends to this like polarity and this chemistry and this connection on all four of those intimacy levels, which you mentioned. And then once you get past that, as you mentioned, honeymoon phase, oftentimes it's like, oh yeah, like, you know, this is my person, I guess. And we're just gonna, you know, kick it in neutral now.
We're all sweatpants, watching Netflix, eating popcorn. We're like not putting effort in to be sexy for one another. Like, if you stop that, who's to blame? Right. Like, because you're putting effort in the beginning to look good and smell good for your partner and go on these amazing dates. And then you've got each other, you're now committed. Well, you stop putting that effort in. And then eventually you start to like feel less attracted to your partner because you're probably spending way too much time with them it's not quality time. It's just time.
Yeah.
And then Esther Perel also talks about this, that like desire between two people like needs mystery. So she talks about how like closeness, like being really close and really knowing our partners, creates that emotional connection where we feel known and they feel deeply known. But then we also need, I'm such a hand talker, but then we also need on the other scale, on the other side of it, a bit of mystery. Ooh. A bit of like time away or like things that we don't know about the other person to create that desire too. Because think about like spending every single day and every waking moment with your partner, probably around COVID, you're all working from home. You're literally 24 hours a day with them. I'd get bored of that person too. I'm bored with my own company for that many like hours on a day. Right. So create a little space. You can reconnect and create that desire for one another. So yeah, you just got to be conscious of those conscious relationships, putting effort in.
Interesting. Yeah. I love that because I don't think it's talked about enough is like space. Space is important. Right. And if you're, you know, a plant is suffocated by there's a building beside it and there's plants really freaking close to it and there's a roof over it, it's not going to grow. But if it has sufficient space around it and you're watering it, like you say, you're putting the work in continually, it's going to continue to grow and grow and grow.
Yeah, it needs some nurturing.
You know?
Yeah, one of the I think one of the biggest concerns sometimes for men, and I think women too, is that there's a guilt around wanting to ask for time alone. So sometimes people ask me, well, how can I ask for time away from my partner without offending them?
Right.
Right. So number one, you should never feel guilty or ashamed for wanting time for yourself. It's so, so important. And secondly, there are lots of ways that you can approach this, right? Understand why you need space. Are you stressed? Is it just everything is too much? You just socially exhausted. You want to go do one of your hobbies. You want to go fish at the lake, ride your bike, go read a book, whatever. You're allowed to do that. So all you need to do is to say to your partner, hey, so-and-so, I've been feeling a little overwhelmed lately. I really want to just take some self-care time. I'm going to go do this for X amount of hours. And I look forward to seeing you when I get back. I love you. How do you feel about a movie night tonight? Right? All you're doing is stating your reason and what you're going to do, and also reconfirming that you still care and love the person and you're going to come back and spend time with them. But you're just like, but I'm also going to go do this for myself. A secure and mature person in that relationship would have no issue with that. Right.
Right.
A very needy, controlling person is going to make you feel awful for needing that space. And that's obviously a red flag. So,
Yeah. Good advice. Because I would imagine if you're like, I need space, and you approach this with your partner in a way that's like, hey, I'm going to the mountains by myself for the weekend. That's not going to go so well. But if you frame it in the way that you described, where it's like, I love you. I look forward to seeing you when I come back, but I just need the space for myself.
Because I'm stressed. Because these things make me feel good. Like, absolutely. And all you're doing is reconfirming to your partner that it's not them, and that you're looking forward to spending time with them later. And also this element of giving a time frame is really helpful too, especially for people that have anxious attachment styles or a little like overthinkers. It's right. Like if you say to them, I just need some space, I'm going away for the weekend. What? Where are you going? What have I done? What does this mean? How long? With who? All these thoughts, right? But if you're like, I need some time for myself, I'm super stressed out from work, I'm going to the lake for 3 hours, I'll see you at 6. It's like not a problem.
right.
Or shouldn't be. Anyway.
So good.
Yeah.
Just down this tangent a little bit more. So you mentioned that the honeymoon phase, it comes to an end typically. And then that's when the problems kind of start. Everything, the connection fizzles out. But you have this idea, I think you said it was Esther Perel's concept of like a date a week.
The Gottman Institute. They say non-negotiable, a date a week. Whether you got kids or not, drop the excuses. Find a way to have a quality date night with your partner.
And with that, would you say that the honeymoon, with that, you think the honeymoon phase extends? Or do you think there's still a level of accepting that, like, okay, things aren't going to be as freaking electric as maybe they were when we started dating? We accept that, but we're going to keep this spark alive a little bit as we move along.
Is
there a level of accepting that as well?
Yes, of course there is. It's not going to be rainbows and butterflies like 24/7. Right. Eventually you do get into a relationship that, like I said, secure and stable and somewhat predictable. And then you put the effort into create those sparks and create those experiences and still continue to learn about your partner. I think a lot of us make the mistake that by the time we're in a serious relationship, we know everything there is to know about that person. We stop being curious about them. We stop asking them questions about their lives, open-ended questions. Yeah. What is your experience? What are you feeling? What do you want? What are your goals? Like we forget to continue being curious about our partners, right?
Right. So yeah, curiosity.
I think it's really important to continue to do that. Yeah. Continue to show interest. Okay. a lot of the times we get frustrated. We like get a little into ourselves. If our partner's talking about something that we don't really even care that much about, or it's not our passion, most of us will cut them off and walk away. Right. Give your partner an ear, listen to what they're doing. Even if it's not the most exciting thing for you, show interest in the things that they are interested in, and they will do the same for you. Right.
I love that you brought up curiosity. And last week I had a guy who teaches, Ryan Walton, his name is, he teaches dads. And he talked about like how important curiosity is and how the curiosity is the antidote to judgment, and judgment being a very divisive figure, both in society and in our personal relationships. When our instinct becomes to judge, that typically will push us apart from the other people in our lives.
Yeah.
And so I love that you bring up curiosity, because I think that's common in relationships, and you see it in marriages that maybe aren't aging well, where as they go along, they were just like, just enthralled with getting to know each other and very curious about each other and how, you know, their mind works. But at some point it turns to, why are you doing this like this? Why do you always do this like this? Why?
Oh,
instead of always seeking to understand what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. Yeah. We start assuming things. We become critical. Relationships are literally not about how can we keep the relationship getting better and better and better and better over time. It's actually, how do we slow the rate of decline?
Slow the decline. Yeah.
I know that sounds awful, but it's kind of true. We can slow that down, and we can have peaks and troughs, of course, but it's like the Gottman Institute also talks about conflict and the four horsemen. I've done another separate podcast on this as well. And it's like the four things that happen in conflict, which is defensiveness, criticism, stonewalling, which is just walking away from the conversation, not giving it the time of day. And then there's contempt. And contempt is the biggest indicator of marital divorce in relationships. And contempt is when one person believes they are better than the other person in the relationship. So it's that kind of sarcasm, eye rolling. You don't know what you're talking about. You're stupid. These kind of thoughts go around in our mind. That is a very bad sign. It's a very bad sign. When you get to that point where one person is holding their partner in contempt, biggest predictor of marital divorce. So
is that right?
If that's happening for you, you need to fix it immediately. Yeah.
Right. Okay. Contempt is not a good decline sign. As you're saying that, I'm thinking of you're not trying to like grow and grow over time. Like that's just not probably realistic, but you're just trying to slow the decline. It's kind of like, to me, like us aging, right? We're all going to die. Our bodies are going to wither away at some point. We're just trying to slow down how quickly that happens.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Basically, say I love you to your partner every day. The Gottman Institute also talks about having a 6-second kiss, right? How guilty do we get where we're like, we might not even kiss our partners every day. We might give them a really quick peck or a smooch and then like walk out the door or whatever, but it's like, give each other a 6-second kiss, because 6 seconds is not a long time, but John Gottman talks about like 6 seconds can like be the start of something else too. So it's like, keep that passion going between the two of you with 6 seconds a day. I love you every day. And like, give them a passionate kiss, right? How many couples do we see? They don't even kiss anymore.
Right,
they just peck, right?
Yeah. Right. They just packed six seconds.
It's true,
I'm super curious in the science of why it's exactly 6 seconds, but I'm sure
I can't remember exactly why. Yeah, no, it's in all of his books and his lectures and stuff. And it's a kiss with possibility, he says.
Ooh, a kiss with possibility. It's got a nice ring to it. Kimberly, thank you so much for doing this. Been a pleasure.
Of course.
Where can our listeners go to follow you, connect with you, et cetera, et cetera?
Yeah. The best way is on my Instagram, Kimberly Nina Hill. You can find me there. You can send me a DM. I answer everything personally. And I've got some free information there that you guys can download as well. Get on my mailing list. You can hear from me a little bit more often. That is the best way. I also am happy, and that's at info@selfconfidenceproject.com. You can go to my website too, but I just changed it around, and it's just, I feel like we don't really even need websites these days because we're so present on social media. I'm also going to be starting a YouTube channel soon too. I don't have anything posted up there yet, but if you guys want to be made aware of the new videos I'll be doing, go ahead, log on and subscribe. You'll be the first to know. I'm going to be starting a series there on giving men dating and relationship advice, right? Yes, from a female perspective, but I'm sure you can tell in today's podcast that I don't beat around the bush. So it's going to be like clear, information.
Yeah. I have no doubt about that. No doubts about that. And I look forward to hopefully seeing the Kimbo Slice video hosted somewhere.
Oh God. I know. I'm like, well, if people have, when you hire a coach, it's very much about fit, right? So people got to get along with my weirdness and my personality in order to get the most value out of time with me. And I can't dim down who I really am.
No, don't do that. Don't do that.
If you want to get coached by Kimbo Slice,
Kimbo Slice,
then reach out to me. Yeah.
Amazing. All right. Kimbo Slice, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Ciao.